and welcome to the last House of Comments of the summer. We are taking the summer off to go and basically live in ice cubes. We may come back with the odd interview episode, but otherwise we will be back in October. With me, as always, is Nick. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hi, Emmett. Well, I'm very hot and I'm just sat here basically in my pants and my headphones with a can of cold
beer. Well, there's an image, listeners.
next to me, which I'm just going to open right now. There we go. To celebrate our last podcast of the summer. And obviously, because it's a podcast, I'm allowed to get away with these things. But
absolutely. Yeah. Tidy whiteys, boxers.
Yeah, well.
The listeners need to know.
Well, I mean, boxers, but please, no imagery, please. It's just.
They're Union Jack boxers, aren't they, Nick?
They are Union Jack boxers completely. Everything I own is Union Jack. But yeah, it's so hot that I'm embracing the minimalist
embracing
lifestyle.
The summer lifestyle.
Yeah,
and Mark, tell us about your pants.
Well, I feel overdressed. I mean, I'm here in like jeans and a t-shirt. Like, maybe I should just progressively throughout the course of the podcast strip off, and we'll see how I get.
This is going to stay a podcast forever, so
it's going to be one of those podcasts. Okay,
So Emma, how's the pitch for the House of Commons TV show going?
Well, until that moment, Nick, it was we were right up there, but I just feel you may have pushed us into goodies territory. Anyway, the podcast is already in disarray, not unlike the Tory Party. How's that for a segue?
Very good. I am laughing and not crying. Or am I crying? I don't know.
I think we've all learned to do both over the last few years.
So, I mean, you know, the Conservative Party. Obviously, I'm going to plug something I wrote because I'm allowed to because I'm talking. But a couple of months ago, maybe even 3 months ago, I wrote this blog for CapEx about how Brexit was going to cause an existential crisis in the Conservative Party. And I didn't realise how right I was going to be. To be honest, it's. I mean, the challenges were always going to be fundamental because, ultimately, in very simple terms, Brexit itself is an unconservative pursuit. The idea that you abandon stability for potential utopia, unsure utopia, just goes against all sort of conservative instincts. But due to the referendum and the political climate, stopping Brexit is also anti-conservative because of the amount of instability that it will cause. So essentially within the core of what the Conservative Party is all about, you have this fundamental schism. And over the last few weeks, we've seen this fundamental schism playing out. And it's not nice, to be honest.
I mean, it is looking worse and worse from the outside. I've been watching Mark Wallace of Conservative Home tweeting responses to the Chequers deal that he's been picking up from various constituency parties. You're hearing about, you know, people having a go at Michael Gove, at his local party. And yeah, this is all summer long now. I mean, there is going to be, I don't see any let up for Tory MPs who are home in their constituencies. And at the same time, we're also hearing leadership rumbles again, and lots of well-sourced rumours of a leadership contest in the autumn. Nick, do you think that will happen, or can she just continue to stagger on?
Well, I'll deal with that secondly, because first of all, I want to deal with your first point about the membership being very unhappy about the Chequers deal. Now, in a funny way, the country is living my existence for the last decade being a Conservative Party member, i.e. turning up in rooms and lots of people talking about the European Union and Brexit. You know, the rest of, until we had Brexit, the actual country was incubated from that. But as a Conservative Party member, of course, when you turn up to events, there's always lots of chatter about it. But the actual truth was, even though there was chatter, there was never actually proper, deep, informed chatter about it. It was always essentially the EU is this bureaucratic place which doesn't do good things and we'd be better off out. And what happened was those who really believed in Brexit essentially talked a lot about it, and those who didn't basically, I think, just let the conversation go because they didn't want to engage with it particularly. And also those who were ambitious within the party sort of nodded towards it. I mean, David Cameron, perfect example, when he, in his leadership contest, when he became leader of the Tory party, said he'd take the Conservatives out of the EU Conservative group for no particular good reason, apart from it would play well with members, even though on a practical level it was a terrible thing to do because it meant we weren't in the room when the deals were done and in the big Conservative bloc. So what's really crazy is we've now got this situation where Conservative MPs are obviously going back to talk about the Chequers deal, and the membership, you know, 70% feels completely accurate to me, absolutely hate it, but none of these people have actually really engaged with the true reality of what Brexit really means, even though they've been talking about it for so long. So the MPs have this really, really, and Theresa May has this really, really big problem, which essentially is that Brexit is very potentially unstable, and what the deal she's tried to come up with is not, you know, really, it's sort of a mishmash deal, but I can see why she's got there, because she's thinking about stability, but the membership don't really see it. So that's the challenge that we have. Now, fundamentally, on the leadership challenge, I don't believe there's going to be a leadership challenge till April. And the reason why is because both sides of the Tory party don't believe that they can win the leadership election necessarily, but also at the same time, they know that the fight will be very fractious and time consuming. And I think they've both sort of settled on the idea that they can influence, the best course for them is to influence Theresa May up until the point of leaving. And once we leave, then basically try and get in somebody who can actually reshape whatever deal leaving is to make it into the version that they believe. So I think Theresa May will stay until essentially the spring, and at that point, I think the different parts of the party will then want to have the fight about what the party is.
But I mean, if what she does is essentially kick even Brexit into the long grass, I mean, she is fond of long grass, and extend the transition period, doesn't that then, you know, doesn't that kick that can down the road?
Well, I think the thing is, if you, the transition period means you've left. It just means you're sort of in a frozen state until a point. But we would actually be an independent third country, and there would be a proper cliff edge. So you know, technically the EU can't do a trade deal or any sort of deal with us until we're an independent country. So, and I think psychologically that's very important. And to be honest, a transition deal is an absolute must, because whatever is agreed is going to be complicated to implement, and it would be pure madness to try and essentially change everything of how we operate and how we interact with the world, you know, in such a short space of time.
And there was me thinking it was going to be the easiest deal we ever made. I'm sure I heard that somewhere. It's interesting.
There you go. That's it.
It's interesting what you were saying about Cameron taking the Tories out of the Conservative group. Presumably that, I mean, it hadn't occurred to me before, but that's obviously had quite a big knock on.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't have had the relationships, been in the room, as you say, which probably had quite a big impact on his inability to get anything when he went back to renegotiate.
100%. And the only... Yeah, definitely.
As I've said repeatedly, I genuinely think that David Cameron is by far the worst Prime Minister that we've had. I mean, in terms of his just, you know, he looked so lucky and confident and projected this competence, and under the surface, there was just nothing there. I'll be interested to see how long Theresa May can continue to stagger on. My big worry is that her current biggest rival is Boris Johnson. He's back on top again, having had his popularity in the party slip a little, his resignation and now his pompous columns seem to be doing in the world of good. And we found out this week that he is meeting with Steve Bannon. So that's just somebody's whose hand I think most people should agree we don't want anywhere near the centre of British politics.
Yeah, I mean, very quickly on the leadership election, my belief is that the next leader of the Conservative Party will have to be a Brexiteer, because I just think the members won't accept somebody who isn't a true Brexiteer, shall we say. I think the final two that we put to the membership will have that on their CV. Now, interestingly, which way that will go, as we saw the last leadership election, who knows? So Boris could very well be a candidate. He could very well fail to get into the last two. I mean, obviously, an advantage for him writing for the Telegraph is the Telegraph is read by a lot of Tory members, so that's very helpful to him. But on your main point, and obviously the reports in the press or on BuzzFeed, to be accurate, haven't been confirmed, and we don't really know what the interaction was. But can I just say that anybody in the Conservative Party who is having conversations and listening to Steve Bannon, as far as I'm concerned, is not somebody that I would ever support, because that is that, you know, whatever you believe about certain issues, Brexit or all this sort of stuff, you must have fundamental principles that you abide by, and one of those principles must be that you don't whip up hate and start war in order to get what you want. So Steve Bannon plays a nasty, vicious type of politics, and you know, I think it's really, really ironic that a nationalist is trying to come to the Europe to spread nationalism. It's just, you know, fundamentally the concept doesn't work. Obviously, you know, hate comes together very well, and hate destroys each other. In the sense, I don't know how this sort of this nationalist grouping will work in the end, but any conservative, mainstream conservative who goes near Steve Bannon is not going to be a friend of mine, I can say that for sure.
We're going to talk later in the podcast about tribalism and staying with a party that you're not fully happy with and the many reasons that people do that. Would Bannon be a red line for you?
Well, I mean, Bannon is a... Well, that's a very interesting question, because, you know, obviously we'll come to that later about political parties, and I think they are in your blood and they're like family. But put it this way, if Steve Bannon became influential in the Conservative Party, I would not take that quietly. You know, I don't know if I'd leave. I don't know if I'd leave, but I don't know if I'd be chucked out, because it's just, I could not countenance that sort of way of doing things. And I would be extremely vocal and fight that. But leaving a party is a different matter. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, I'm Emma Burnell, a political journalist.
Hi, I'm Steve Fielding. I'm Professor of Political History at the University of Nottingham.
And together, we do a monthly podcast called The Zeitgeist Tapes,
during which we talk about a film, TV show, anything to do with culture and its political implications.
We hope you'll enjoy it. Please do look for us on iTunes as The Zeitgeist Tapes. And if you do enjoy it, don't forget to rate and review.
So, everyone's gone off for the summer. There's not going to be any more legislative fights now. So the fights are going to happen over barbecues and cream teas and champagne quaffing in various gardens. But we did have some Brexit votes that came quite close to the wire towards the end of last year. The end of last week, and in terms of the Parliament. Mark, did you think any of them were going to pass?
Well, any of the amendments?
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing was just such a mess. I just want to come briefly back to what Nick was saying, because in an earlier incarnation of this podcast, and people who've been listening for a long time might remember, and this podcast has been going for nearly 10 years now, and at the time, it was hosted by me and Stuart Sharp. And the first guest we ever had on was Ian Dale, actually, who at the time was a prominent Tory blogger. He's now a broadcaster on LBC. And I remember something he said very clear. It might not have been the first episode. It might have been like episode 12 or something when he came back. But he said, because we were talking about political parties and we were talking about kind of ideology, and he said pretty much the only thing that if you were Conservative, would disbar you from, or you would find not, you would not be selected if you said in a meeting, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can say and all kinds of different views you could have. But if you're in favour of the EU, you just simply are not going to get selected. And that was 9 years ago. And he said it's the closest thing to a religion that the Conservative Party has got. And I think as well, like, 70% of Tory members you know, all these people who are talking about how they want it to be a hard Brexit. I was very struck by what Nick said in a previous episode. He was talking to a member of his local party who said that he was worried that, you know, Theresa May's Brexit wasn't going to be hard enough, and how Nick just thought that was crazy. But it just kind of strikes me that, you know, it's very easy to be careless with other people's prosperity, isn't it? I think lots of people who think that are the people who just won't be affected. In fact, I'm reminded of a quote from Trainspotting, which you might have to bleep, actually, Emma. It's when Renton's thinking about Tommy and the fact he's got AIDS, and he says it's easy to be philosophical when it's some other with shite for blood. And it's like, I think it's that sort of thing. There's a lot of people who are just shrugging their shoulders and thinking, yeah, it'll be fine because it won't affect them. There are lots of people who it will affect. You know, I read an article today by someone who's got diabetes and who has been trying to find out from the NHS whether they're going to still be able to get their insulin, and they've not been able to get an answer from anyone because the truth is no one knows. So he's now having to think about how he can stockpile a year's worth of insulin in case supplies stop. And it's like, you know, I'm privileged because I don't have diabetes. Sorry, that was a digression. But just to come back to your point, I mean, it's such a mess. Loads of these votes were knife edge. They seem to go in favour of the Brexiters, but you could certainly imagine the wind blowing in a slightly different direction, with slightly different amendments, they could have gone the other way. It does appear the Brexiteers very, very slightly have the whip hand, which is why May caved to them on their basically people keep calling Jacob Rees-Mogg amendments. But the whole thing is just completely unstable, and it appears to me to be unsustainable because there isn't a majority for a hard Brexit, and increasingly it's starting to look like that's where we might be headed, because I was amazed at how little support Theresa May's plan has, given that I thought it might be the only thing that would have parliamentary support. But actually in the country, I saw some crazy figure, like in a three-way poll where the choice was Remain, Leave with no deal, or Theresa May's Brexit plan. Theresa May's Brexit plan got 12%. I mean, that just shows just how unpopular it is and how polarised and how crazy the situation is.
Yeah, I mean, I very much doubt that 88% of the country have read the Chequers deal or could tell you what's actually in it.
How popular these things are. You know, most people probably didn't understand all the ins and outs and inner workings of the EU, like Nick was alluding to earlier on before the referendum. That doesn't matter. If there is another referendum, people won't be voting on all of the intricate details. They'll be voting on gut feel.
That's very true. But there is, you call anything Theresa May's ex, and you're not gonna get half the population supporting it these days. The whole thing's a mess. There seem to be a lot of things that people won't countenance in the Commons. So almost everything can be voted down, but there's almost no way you can see a positive vote for something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, which is why I'm increasingly wondering if we might end up by default with another referendum, because there just isn't any other way. There's no parliamentary majority for any sort of deal. And I wonder if that ultimately, I was just thinking this today, I was out for a walk and I was listening to a couple of podcasts. I'm wondering if actually the final deal might be Remain or hard Brexit, because I'm not sure there's going to be a third option, because I don't think there's going to be a third option that has enough support in Parliament anyway.
Good God, how terrifying.
And my fear is that hard Brexit will win if that happens. I think it might now.
Yeah.
A while ago, I thought no. Now I think maybe it will.
I mean, I think we've got to sort of think about the EU in all of this as well, because obviously, a deal takes two sides. And my view has always been that the thing that really sort of shifted the vote towards Brexit was the fact that we couldn't do a deal on freedom of movement. Now, of course, the pillars and all this sort of stuff is all very, very important. But ultimately, I think that, you know, was the thing that swung it from 52% one way to 52% the other way. Now, you know, the EU itself is having serious problems with immigration and, you know, what that's doing to certain countries specifically as well in the old Eastern Bloc, but places like Italy as well and Greece and even France. So I think the EU itself really has to, I think, should think about, you know, how to fashion itself in this modern environment to make sure that it survives in a good state. And and I would suggest that sort of making some concessions on freedom of movement could help a lot.
It might help in terms of getting a Remain vote in this country, but the EU's immigration problem isn't about intra-EU freedom of movement. It's not people going from one part of the EU to another that is causing a refugee crisis. It's people coming from Syria and Africa. And war zones. So it would help us to remain within the EU if that went to a second referendum on those terms. I don't think it would help in Italy and the Five Star Movement or Greece or even Germany, where they took in 1 million migrants and that's caused Angela Merkel some severe political headaches. So, Mark, I know you're not really, but you are basically our token Lib Dem. So I have to ask, where was Vince?
I mean, I'll play along with the conceit momentarily. I did leave the party nearly 5 years ago, but apparently he was at some secret clandestine meeting on Chatham House terms about potentially forming a new party in order to try and stop Brexit, whilst just down the road, a vote was going on that could have helped stop Brexit. And he decided it was more important to talk about stopping Brexit than actually try and stop Brexit. That's about the best I've got. I'm not sure there's any real excuse. He fucked up and he knows he fucked up. And there's even now talk of leadership challenges and stuff, although I'm not sure who'd really want to lead the party at the moment.
Winston's still on maternity.
Her baby's only a few months old, yeah. There was talk of Leila Moran, who's MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, but she's only been in for a year. I'm not really sure putting someone with that little experience at the helm at a time like this would be the way to go. But who knows? Who knows? The Lib Dems can do some strange things. I've seen some strange charts, some strange organograms when I was a member.
It would be somewhat ironic if Labour was the only party not having a leadership contest for once.
Yeah. But as I said, I'm not really a Lib Dem anymore. Unlike you, Emma, who is
a member. I've never been
a
bloody Lib Dem.
No. You're a member of the Labour Party, though. You're a long-term member of that party.
I am, for my sins, a long-term, long-suffering.
Yeah. Well, you wrote a piece for The Times this week, which...
That was an interesting piece, actually.
Thank you, boys. Well trained. The fivers are in the post.
Yes, that was a good.
Well, actually, as it happens, we were talking about it beforehand, and we did both read it independently. So you should be pleased that it's getting out to the right sort of people, Emma. I like Matt Chorley. I like the Red Box podcast as well.
He's got the right level
of kind of detached, sardonic kind of astonishment with what's going on. His catchphrase at the moment is this is not normal.
I really want one of those Red Box mugs that says that.
I didn't know they did those. I might get one.
If you get the email, they're advertised.
Okay. I get Stephen Bush's email. I feel like I was being disloyal if I was to get one. I don't know if Stephen listens to this, but anyway. So you wrote that piece and it was very interesting.
Yes.
Because go on.
Well, what I was trying to do, some readers more successfully than others, was take an anthropological look at party membership rather than simply you join because of the policies or anything, or the sociological look, and think about sort of how people act as humans. And why, when we act a certain way as humans, you're doing my bit, Nick.
Do I count being a Tory as a human?
I'm not going to count that for all of your party. Fantastic. The ones that hang out with Steve Bannon are off the list.
Good to know.
But you as a Tory, you know, you probably have the same thing where, particularly as a councillor, most of your spare time is taken up and spent with the same group of people. And it is your natural instinct to form attachments and loyalties. It would be weird if we didn't form attachments and loyalties to the people we spend 3 or 4 nights a week with, or Saturday afternoons with canvassing and then the pub. You know, these are people we spend a great deal of our time with. And as socialized creatures, we are instinctually drawn to them, make them our friendship group. And further, I think you said earlier on, when you were talking about, you know, your red lines, the party's your family. And people do feel that way. And so when it came out of various arguments, or not arguments really, just people who were kind of, FBPE on Twitter, almost everyone with that hashtag, just as like baffled at people who are members of the Labour Party or members of the Tory Party right now, who are also pro-European. It's like, how can you stay when all this is going on? And I'm like, well, and I tried to explain why people stay, and I tried to do it in a detached way and say, look, this is it. You know, it's about the loyalty and the links that you make and that long-term relationship that you have with your friends and the difficulty of knowing that even if you could stay friends with people, and you probably would stay friends with most people, like you wouldn't, like you, some people.
But they'd look at you a bit differently, though, wouldn't they? And they wouldn't have the same conversations with you. And I think also, for those of our listeners who aren't members of political parties, once you get involved in the political party, you've been in the political party for a while, you have a group of people. It's like almost being at school. I'm going to extend the analogy from family to school, where, okay, you might all go to the same school, but there's a group of you in the playground who hang out together. Yeah. You might interact with other groups, but your group is actually a really important group within that school. And you know, for you, Emma, obviously, and for me as well, I suppose, you know, we are associated with certain factions of our own party, and we have friends who, you know, who we support in different things. Like, I noticed you're supporting, you've got the NEC election.
And Joanna. I'm openly supporting. My faction is supporting one candidate. I am openly supporting two.
Fair enough. So and you sort of start getting into that sort of stuff when you've been a member for a political party. So it's not just about your party. It's actually helping your friends within that party achieve what you think. Ultimately, we all join the parties because we want to achieve the best for society, don't we? So you know, and we hope that, you know, together that we can do that with our friends and then within our wider party. So, and once you get into that level of detail, sort of stepping away from that is just, yeah, it just would feel really odd. So, and obviously, as Mark did say earlier, we do have one member of ours who stepped away from all of that sort of stuff. So how's it been for you, Mark, since stepping away from the old...
The thing is, have you missed the camaraderie? I wasn't embedded in the Lib Dems, certainly as Emma is within Labour, and from what I can tell from having talked to you over the last few years and heard you talk about your activities, nowhere near as deeply embedded as you. And therefore, it wasn't such a big wrench. I joined the Lib Dems in 2008 and I left them in 2013. And I was pretty heavily involved. I mean, it was predominantly via kind of blogging and, you know, going to party conferences. But I did do some stuff locally. I didn't particularly like a lot of the local stuff, really. I'm not so good at knocking on doors. And it was quite nice to be listening to podcasts and pushing leaflets through doors and stuff. That was OK, a bit of fresh air. But Lib Dems are obsessed with leafleting. It's like all the time, leaflets. And it's... if you're not out delivering leaflets two or three times a week. Yeah, and occasionally I'd be looking at these leaflets thinking, what on earth am I posting? Like, it's nonsense. But, you know, you just shut up and deliver leaflets. You know, that's basically what it was. Yeah.
Great time for listening to podcasts, though, isn't it? Delivering leaflets.
I did miss some aspects of it. I mean, I did miss going to local meetings and stuff. It was nice to spend time with people who were relatively like-minded, although the membership of my local party where I lived was very, very old and we had no real prospect of winning any council seats. So it wasn't that active, to be honest. But, you know, I really liked going to the conferences, and actually I still have my cake and eat it because I've been to a couple of Lib Dem conferences. I haven't paid to go into the secure zone, but because the Lib Dems aren't in government now, it's like there's just loads of fringe events going on in hotels dotted around. I'm going again in a couple of months time when they're in Brighton, so you know, I sort of can still do that, and I'm still in touch with some people from there. I still meet up with them occasionally, still have little chats with them online and stuff, so it's not such a huge wrench. I have considered rejoining, but I am still a fellow traveler with the Lib Dems, but it probably wouldn't be for me at the moment. If some new party emerged and it seemed to be on the up and like a real force, I might consider joining them. Depends exactly what they were trying to do, but I don't miss it enough to want to rejoin, I have to be honest. What struck me about Emma's article, though, was how much what you were describing, Emma, made it sound. I mean, I'm not saying that being a member of a party is like being in a cult, but some aspects of what you were talking about, you know, one of the reasons why people stay is because they don't want to find that then they lose touch with the people, you know, who they've known for many years and wouldn't get invited to meetings. And I imagine some people, you know, very, very committed activists, if you were to leave, especially if you joined another party, would consider it a form of betrayal and probably would shun you in a way that happens with religious cults. I mean, how much crossover with kind of organisations like that do you think there are? Because some of the parallels seemed a bit striking to me in your article. That's not what I was saying. I was very clear.
Is Labour a cult?
I've been guilty of the Corbyn cult narrative, and it's not actually very fair. It's like any cults work on the same sort of loyalty principle, but ramp it up to 11. Whereas, you know, what I was trying to get at, and there is a real difference, is just you have in common with people the time that you spend doing things with them. And we've all had those jobs where you're really intense and you work all day and there's all sorts of internal politics going on. And then you go to the pub and you spend 5 hours with them talking about that internal politics. And you do that night in, night out sometimes when it's a really intense place. And that's not a cult. But when you then leave that job, you don't have that thing to talk about with those people anymore. So you do drift apart a bit. You do see each other less often. You do spend less time together. You have less in common.
But also, Emma, I think the other thing is that being in a political party is quite often a struggle, enjoyable struggle in a sense, but because you're debating, you're arguing, you're trying to do stuff, you have to go leave the things there. So if you step out of that, I look at these people who I would still be friends with going, but yeah, you walk away from
people
the struggle.
Will
so
feel abandoned.
How serious are you about change? Is you know, so yeah, there's a bit of a shame. There's a bit of shame, isn't there? I don't know if it's a bit like a cult. You're not a true believer.
I always,
it's
certainly like,
are
you still a socialist? Sort of would be a question that would be reasonable to ask someone who left the Labour Party. Are you... But equally, from the other perspective, if you are somebody who's not happy in Corbyn's Labour Party and you have a small group of people who are also not happy in Corbyn's Labour Party, but you're staying and fighting, and then you leave that fight, you feel like you're abandoning that underdog. You know, the people who... Well, you are abandoning them. Now, they may be okay with it. They may not be. It depends on your relationship with that, and that's going to be different for every person. But you will feel that way.
So, but I've seen some people who were prominent in the Labour Party and have left because of Corbyn and gone to sort of, you know, very interesting, you know, public policy type of jobs and all that sort of stuff, and that's absolutely great. But I think they lose an edge by not actually being in that political fight. And while they might be doing good things, this is my judgment on them, ultimately, they're basically have ducked out of one of the really important aspects of trying to improve the world to make it a better place, which can be hard. And you can lose. And there are times when you're on the losing side and you're losing. And
that's
but, you know,
the
you don't,
other
you don't
key
get back
thing
to winning
is that
until,
the reason we
fight.
Are weird. You and I, Nick, and Mark used to be weird, but he got over it. We are part of less than one.
I know. He still chats to us every now and then. We are part of the less than
1% of the country who are members of a political party. We have opted into this very, very small group of people who are interested in politics to such a level that we really find it part of our identity. We want to carry a card in our wallet that says, I am a member of this and these are the things I believe in. And you do that because you have a fierce burning belief in some sort of social change or social progress or conserving something.
I've got a question for Mark, actually, because I think both me and you, Emma, we joined so long ago, I forgot why, really, in a sense. But I mean, you probably remember why. But Mark, you came from no political background at all. I remember speaking to you
because
about
Polly Toynbee told me to.
What made you sort of join?
You weren't expecting that, were you? I was thrashing around trying to work out how best to influence the debate on electoral reform. And I, seriously. I'd already sort of been involved in politics, but via going to meetings of the Electoral Reform Society and various talks and stuff, because that was what I was most interested in. And I was kind of, you know, I contacted various people who I knew were in favour of electoral reform, asking, you know, how best I could get involved. And Polly Toynbee said, you should join the Lib Dems. They are the party of electoral reform. And I thought, do you know what? She's right. And that wasn't the sole reason. I then spent some time and I kind of got to know some people in the local party and I started delivering leaflets initially before I joined. But I thought in the end, yeah, I'll go for it. The reason I left, because we're talking about potentially leaving political parties. I mean, I talked about this a lot at the time and I wrote about it at length. But for anyone who isn't aware, I just got tired of the fact that I just didn't think that the Lib Dems were making the sort of difference in government I would have wanted them to make. And it wasn't about tuition fees and it wasn't about, you know, some of the, you know, really bad policies that I thought they'd had to compromise on, because I fully accept as an electoral reformer that you have to accept that coalitions are going to have to make compromises. It was that they just seemed to make no effort at all in the kind of, you know, the day-to-day politics. It was particularly seeing Nick Clegg standing at the dispatch box and he was worse than Cameron. And it's like they're not even really trying to make the sort of I would like to see to how our politics is done. And I'd had enough of it. And I specifically asked Nick Clegg about that when he interviewed him and he gave me some kind of, you know, answer along the way. Well, you know, you can only work within the parameters. And he said, I did try being more, you know, mollifying, and I was just absolutely murdered for it in the newspapers, and wasn't good enough as far as I was concerned. That's ultimately why I left. That might seem like a strange reason to leave a political party, but for me, it was somewhat about the policies, like drug policy reform and liberal policies and stuff like that. But how politics is done is very important to me, and I just didn't see it, and that's why I left in the end.
Just to finish the point I was making earlier, you're not just losing your friendship group. You are also losing this core part of your identity that you feel and may still feel is the only and best vehicle for you to make social change. To give up on that is incredibly hard.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think if, let's say, my worst nightmare scenario, Jacob Rees-Mogg became leader of the Conservative Party and Steve Bannon became his chief of staff, or you know, I mean, I would be extremely vocal in the fact that I would believe this was a takeover of the party. It wasn't really what conservatism was about. I'd say this was, you know, terrible stuff. And ultimately, but I don't know if I could leave without, or unless there was a proper split, which I think in that case there might be a proper split, to be honest. You know, the sort of, you know, a sort of China mainland Taiwan split might happen at that point where we both claim to be conservatives. But I think I would have to sort of continue being a beacon for what I believe the party was about unless there was somewhere else where that beacon could be. You know, and that's how I feel, which is obviously very odd, you know, because ultimately, I suppose for me, it's deeper than who the leader is. It's about all those networks and friends and what I do. But ultimately, if that happened and then that continued for a while and I got loads of stick and stuff, then maybe I would change my mind. That would change. I don't know. Especially a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think it may well be that there is a split in one or both of the main parties. And then, of course, all bets are off because you don't know that you and some of your mates definitely won't end up in the same party, almost inevitably. And that's then, you know, you'll probably have to go through all these emotions anyway. But I do think that people who don't join political parties but are interested in politics quite often have this very, very skewed view as to why people are members of political parties, either because they think they're in it for themselves or because they just get this word tribalism in their head, as if being, wanting to be like the people you like is a bad thing, and wanting to be with the people you like and having a loyalty to the people you like is a bad thing. And I just, the reason I wrote the article is because I wanted to just take a step back and say, well, hang on, maybe if you want to influence these people and you want to change their minds about how they're behaving on Brexit, you have to understand who they actually are rather than who, what your caricature of them is. And that's why I wrote it. And I hope it went a little bit of a way towards doing that. Who knows? Maybe one person read it and didn't think, "Oh, you sad bastards," which was about 90% of the comments underneath.
I did start reading the blurred line comments and I stopped after about 10 because I just thought, yeah.
Go on.
Can I make a confession?
I didn't read all of them. I started because it was the Times and I'd never written for the Times before and I wanted to see if it was any different, but it wasn't.
Whenever I write it somewhere and then people say, "Oh wow,
not an idiot,"
I'm like, "No." They said, "Wow, you should can't believe these people." I'm like,
"Very, very sensible.
I can believe these people," which is why I don't read the comments. Interesting that I do.
I do. I find Twitter a little bit more progressive. Yeah.
So that's a bit different. But because it's more conversation.
I'm fully behind that.
But
it was interesting to write, and I'm very grateful to the Times for printing it. And I hope they will print me again. I hope they enjoyed me. So on that note, Emma's been in the Times. Nick is not voting for Jacob Rees-Mogg, and Mark's still not a Lib Dem. Have a lovely summer, everyone. Just before we go, just want to say thank you to Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production.